Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down. Who's man? Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys can get in your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to put it down the babies. Put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Game time!
Okay, family of the network, we didn't go anywhere. We just had to take a little quick break and reset things and make sure that we were still online and still tracking very well. We've been talking with Mr. David Benzel, a great author and athlete in his own right. Has been a very accomplished man of his day. You know, like I said earlier on, you know, he holds a couple of national records and national water skiing titles as well, and had the opportunity to coach and most importantly, is a parent with children, have been involved in sports for a number of years. Let's go back to David and let's finish our nice little conversation with David. David, are you still on with us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Okay, great.
We're back on there.
Fantastic.
I'm not sure, you know, we had to go some kind of programming thing going on here. I seen that it cut me off, and then I figured I came right back up on it. But we were talking about helping children understand and realizing that, you know, things that they're doing in sports are actually setting them up for some positive things in life. And, you know, I talked briefly about, you know, your choices, your decisions, and your consequences, and you were talking about, you know, how to help them succeed. Let's move into let's talk a little bit about something slightly different. You know, we miss out on, well, athletes miss out on realizing that their environment helps them or takes away from their performance. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've seen a number of young men and also young ladies as well that think that, okay, we're at the college life and or we're even in high school days and, you know, we have a game the next day, but at the same time we have a pregame party going on that we think we need to attend and all these other things. Can you share anything with us on that, being an athlete yourself as well?
Yeah, I guess you're referring to the choices that kids make, socially, maybe, the night before a game and that sort of thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. Exactly, okay. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, these are decisions that are influenced by either what the parents and or the coaches have set up as expectations well in advance of that moment. Now, if coaches and parents have never talked about the best ways to prepare yourself for a game, if that conversation's never happened, then we shouldn't be surprised if the night before kids want to stay out and, you know, be with their friends and do something social or even stay up all night and watch TV because there's something good on. So it's really up to us to have had conversations ahead of time, well ahead of time, that says when we're going to go into a competition, what you do during the 24 hours leading up to that is part of pregame preparation. You know, what you eat, how much water you drink in terms of hydration, how late you stay up, all of these things, how much rest you get, all of this in the 24 hours leading up to game time is called pregame preparation. And it's a very important 24 hours. It has to do with what mindset are you in, but we have to have had that conversation. We can't expect kids to automatically know that. And then, of course, you can back up from that and say, you know, what we do the week before a competition even has some impact. You know, did we practice our skills, you know? Are we confident? Do we have the right strategy? And not to put pressure on them, but to help them take responsibility for their choices leading up to the game as well as during the game and even how they behave after the game.
You know, David, that's a very strong point there. again, parents, I'm going to yell it out to you. It's been a teachable moment. You need to get all this logged in. You know, when David talked about not only the night before, but the week prior, you know, and what's the mindset? You know, what's the overall mindset? And this is not something that you can force upon your child, parents. This is something that they have to develop themselves. You can talk to them about it. You can help them try to develop a working mindset to be successful. But we all know at the end of the day, the athlete's going to make that final decision on whether or not he or she wants to, sit down and put in that extra bit of effort. We talked about how ensuring that, you know, the kids are having fun. And I say kids because they are kids, and oftentimes I think what happens, we get the word student-athlete mixed up with children and think that they're one and the same. I tell parents all the time it's not one and the same. You know, you as parents, you remember that that is your child or your kid or whatever you decide to call him or her, and everybody outside of that circle looks at him or her as a student-athlete. David talked about quite a few different things, you know, and we also talked about burnout, making sure that the kids don't get to the point where they get burnt out. And the way we avoid some of that is making sure that the child is having fun at their, you know, at their level, at their bit of excitement about the sport. It's not something that we're going to be able to live through, but they're having fun, you know. And we just finished talking about the social environment. I see we've got a couple callers on the line. Let's see if they have any questions here in a minute. But we talked about the social environment. But when we talk about the social environment, Dave, and we move on from there, and, you know, we talk about sitting down and talking to our athletes about that. How do we make sure, or I shouldn't say make sure, As parents, how do we start that conversation with our children about developing a solid team chemistry? And I'm going to tell you why I asked that particular question. I asked that question because you often have, especially when you have a small game such as basketball, when you only have five players on the field at a time, okay, and they're in that team mode or should be in that team mode, but one player has a tendency to think that he's being, have more advantages or more opportunity, or coach favors him or her a little bit better than the other one. You know, how do you help children understand or start working toward developing a solid team chemistry?
You know, the first team a child is ever on is their family. That's their first team. And so the guidelines for how we run our family would be the foundation for how I help my child understand his baseball team or his basketball team. You know, for instance, in our family, we decided in the beginning that we were always going to talk respectfully to each other, that we were going to look out for each other, that we would even sacrifice something that we wanted for ourselves in order for someone else in the family to have what they want. And so that atmosphere, that idea, gets started in a family. So that when a child goes to play on a team, it's easy for you to say, now, this is sort of a different kind of family. It doesn't have unconditional love in it like your home family does, but you do have to look out for these people on your team. And you do have to be willing to put the team ahead of yourself. And we don't criticize each other on a team. We stand shoulder to shoulder with our teammates, and we support them. And we help them, but we don't criticize them. And so we help our kids realize that team is just an extended family, a different kind of family, and that the same kind of guidelines make for a healthy team. And it's amazing to me that how many times parents will actually undermine the chemistry of a team because when their child gets in the car afterwards, they criticize their child's teammates. Well, this only teaches the child to be critical of his own teammates. What kind of team chemistry can you have when you're busy criticizing other people on the team?
Exactly. You know, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. you know, when we talk about when to have that conversation, you know, and, you know, David shared something with us, be invited to the conversation. Parents, if you haven't thought about that before, that is something that you want to put on the front page of your things to remember out of this particular conversation. You want to be invited to the conversation. And what do we mean by being invited to the conversation? Don't get in the car 5 seconds after the game and then you have your series of questions and critiques of what took place at that particular sporting event. You know, wait. You know, you may wait, as David said earlier, you may wait, you know, an hour later, 2 hours later, 3 hours later, or maybe even the next day until your child comes to you and invites you into that conversation. You know, that's a very strong point David just made. Don't be too critical, you know, and when you're doing that, you are going back to what I just said, be invited to that conversation. Be invited to that conversation. Well, David, being an athlete yourself, you know, how important is your mental development over your physical development, or is there a balance?
Well, you know, we're multifaceted human beings, aren't we? We're mental and we're physical and we're emotional and we're even spiritual beings. And so a person can't ever focus on only one because they are interrelated. And many times in sports, this does happen where we overemphasize the physical and we don't spend time teaching kids or teaching ourselves how to develop mental skills. And mental skills are just as important as physical skills when it comes to performing at anything because, you know, everything comes from thought. Everything comes from thought. And it's said that 80% of what an athlete does during a performance, 80% of it comes from their subconscious mind. So that means that's the part of the brain that's on autopilot based on its past experiences and lessons. So, yeah, I think it's pretty important, and I think it gets neglected a lot. And we have to have conversations with our kids about, and again, this has to be a non-threatening, open conversation about, you know, you ask a good question, like when you're afraid that you can't do something, what do you hear yourself say? And that's a really interesting question to ask your child. When you think you can't do something, when you're afraid you can't do something, what do you hear that little voice in your head? Now, that's something I would ask a child after about age 7 or 8. Probably not before that. Not necessary. But once they start to get 8, 9, and 10 years old, all of a sudden kids are very aware that they've got a little voice in their head. And sometimes that little voice is helping them by saying things like, I can do it, I can do it. And sometimes they've got a little voice in their head that says, I'm not very good. I'm not as good as the other kids. I can't do this. And we got to help them learn to replace that voice with a better voice.
Ah, okay. Again, parents, I'm telling you, if you're missing out on this or if you want to call in, you have any questions, you can give us a call at 646-929-2416. You know, the information that Mr. Benzel is sharing with us this afternoon is tremendous information, and again, I say this is running parallel to what the Parents Coach and Parent Network has been saying and trying to preach and put out there over the last couple of years or so, and we will continue to get that information out there. You know, David, we appreciate all that information. You know, you start talking about the mindset. And hopefully we're going to have a show here real soon just to focus on that particular thing. We've had a couple shows that touched on that, and we've had a few shows where we talked about disorders, you know, mental disorders and just being focused. But we're going to work towards bringing up a gentleman probably to talk about some mental toughness here in the near future. And hopefully we can get you back on to chime in with that, and we can have one monster of a show. But, you know, when we talk about sports, you know, do you think that all sports present the same type of challenge? And I say that because, you know, you look at some sports, folks are still questioning whether or not this is a sport, that's a sport, whatever. whatever. I think anything you're out there and you're doing something physical, and whether or not you're competing or not, I think it still should be considered a sport, you know. Because I just had this conversation just the other day when I was talking to some young ladies about cheerleading, and they just literally just ate me up over the issue of cheerleading. And I had to agree with them at the end of the day, you know, especially when they start talking about the training and all the other kind of stuff. So do you think that all sports present the same type of challenge?
Well, to a broad degree, the answer is yes, of course, that there's a mental aspect to it, there's a physical aspect to it, there's all kinds of lessons about self-discipline, about self-control, about self-awareness. Almost all sports present an athlete with the opportunity to master some of these lessons. Now, what I have found is that the nature of some sports present unique challenges. Let me give you an example. We've been involved with the United States Tennis Association recently doing some workshops for tennis parents and tennis coaches. And one of the things I did not know about tennis and didn't appreciate is that when you're in a tennis match, you are out there by yourself and you don't get you're not even allowed to receive any coaching from anybody during the tennis match. So in other words, your parents sitting in the stands can't be, you know, telling you to, you know, get your racket back faster or turn your feet more. Even your coach cannot be coaching you during the tennis match. You are completely on your own to figure out how to beat your opponent. Now, that's unique to tennis because in almost every other sport, at least the coach has a chance to talk to you and to coach you up or, you know, encourage you to change your strategy or do this or do what. That doesn't happen. So tennis is unique in that. And then, of course, you know, I think there's some other sports that have unique aspects to them, and that doesn't make them better or worse, but there are unique challenges in every sport. You know, volleyball, what an interesting sport. Here's this ball bouncing back and forth across the net, and each player only has a fraction of a second where they actually have contact with the ball. And if we added all the time up in the entire volleyball game of how much time the athlete actually has contact with the ball, other than when they're, you know, about to serve, once the game is in play, the total time is, you know, like a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of ironic? So there's a lot of unique things in different sports, but the fundamental challenges are the same.
Okay. And, you know, I say the same thing to some degree with track, and I tell that to some young athletes that I've worked with over the years. You know, once you step on that starting line, you know, only thing that you have guiding you and motivating you, you hear folks on the sidelines, but, you know, you have the white line to your left and the white line to your right, and everything else is coming from within you. And I think we have a caller, Dave, and have a question here. Let's see if we can get the caller on the line.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the line with the Parents Coach, the Parent Network.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
And David.
Hello.
Yes, how are you? Who are we
speaking
to?
Hi, my name's Craig. I have a question. The parents of young athletes, I often hear they're torn in a situation when they have a coach, the kids have a coach that's what you might call old school, does a lot of yelling and screaming and maybe even cuss words. And the coach is well-respected, has won for years. Everybody thinks the coach is the greatest. And the kid does not say anything, tries to, you know, keep a stiff upper lip with all that. I guess my question is, how best should a parent be an advocate? When should they be an advocate? When should they step up? At what point should they say, you know what, this is too much, I can tell my kid's self-esteem is going downhill? This is a really tricky area. I'd like to hear David's advice.
Yeah, boy, I'm glad you asked that question because I have even personal experience with that with my own children. The first thing that, as a parent, you have a right to expect of any coach, and that is I give my child to you with a certain amount of developed self-esteem, and I expect you to give my child back to me with no less. No less. You have a right to even say that to a coach, but certainly to expect that, you know, you can take my child and play them where you want to play them, how much you want to play them, you're the coach. but I expect my child to come back to me with as much self-esteem as I hand them to you. Now, that if a coach has a particular style that involves a communication style that's maybe not familiar to your child, in other words, he yells more, he raises his voice more, and your child is not used to that, that is part of your child's education. And your child has to learn to kind of cope with that and learn to differentiate the message from the way it's delivered. In other words, the message is different than the delivery. And you can help your child with that and help them to understand that the coach is delivering a really good message to you, but don't get distracted by the delivery. The only time that I think a parent really has an obligation to step in and interfere is when you find that the coach's words fall across this line into area of what I call personal attack, where it gets personal, where there's either name-calling. You should not have to put up with cursing with a coach dealing with children. You should not have to put up with that. And I think then you go over his head and make some give some feedback about that. You think it's inappropriate. It's not the raising of voice and yelling. The problem is when coaches start to make personal attacks, name-calling, ridiculing, embarrassing, these are kinds of things that do attack a child's self-esteem. And in children's sports, youth sports, it's completely inappropriate. Completely inappropriate. Does that help you?
That helps a lot. One little follow-up question. Sometimes the kids will actually tell the parents, do not say anything. You know, they're afraid of the coach mm-hmm. coming back down on them, the other players finding out that you're a whiner, things like that. Can you add to that?
Yeah.
They're afraid of the parent advocating for them and
yes,
what might happen.
That's right. And that's why you do have to, as children get older, they have to be more and more, you know, teach them to be capable of going to the coach and having a conversation with the coach. And you know, my son did that with a college coach his first year in college and went to the coach and said, "Coach, you don't have to like me, but you do have to show me respect." And he said right to the coach, he says, I don't even have to like you, but I will always show you respect. Well, the coach nodded politely and said, thank you very much for the conversation, and then proceeded to, dish out some unpleasant, outcomes because of that conversation.
Yeah.
So we don't admire that coach very much because he instead of taking it in the spirit it was meant, he exerted some revenge instead. But you know, that's his problem, and I'm proud of my son for going to him and saying, you know, I will treat you with respect, and I ask you to treat me with respect. And we've got too many coaches in this country who are well-versed in their sport but do not understand how to coach. And unfortunately, this lord of the locker room mentality where I'm practically God over this team is wrong. Every coach is really has an obligation to treat players with respect, and they'll get so much more out of them, so much more.
You know what I call that, David? I call that oftentimes we got coaches reading their own press clipping. You know, they're sitting there and they're believing everything that the media says about them. He's tough. He's getting the points across. He has a winning attitude. He's this. And come on, quit reading your own press clippings and realize that you're a man just like them children that's right there in that locker room with you, and you're going to have to respect them at some point in time.
Is it Greg? Is that your name?
Craig,
excuse me.
Very helpful.
Well, I hope that helps you, but I think parents need to respect children's, you know, initial request to say, you know, let me handle it, Dad, let me handle it. Okay, then go handle it. That's fine. As long and until you feel a coach has crossed that line, like I said, where he's making personal attacks, and then you have a right and an obligation to step up and say to the coach, Coach, I want to talk to you about something. And it's about, you know, your delivery on this particular item. This, I think, is inappropriate. And you know what? If you've got a coach who's crossed the line too many times, it's time to take your child and go find a new program.
Hey, David, Craig, you know, one quick thing on that is, you know, at what age do we actually allow the children to handle it? You know, because that can come at a very young age in some cases. And I think at too young of an age, I think the parents should be more proactive. What's your thoughts?
Well, again, if it's crossed the line and it's ridicule, it's name calling, it's you know, some of these things that are personal attacks, I think we have to step in immediately, absolutely immediately. Our children are not equipped to handle that, and they make the assumption that the coach is always right. I mean, here's an adult that we've put them, you know, in their care. So children just assume that this is normal and this is okay, and it's not okay. But again,
exactly.
I'm making a distinction between personal attacks and a passionate coach who raises his voice and yells. Our children have to learn that, you know, adults come with different styles, and they're just trying to, you know, they got a lot of energy, a lot of passion. As long as they continually demonstrate that they care about my child, then I'm going to let my child learn to cope with some of that.
Okay. You have anything else, Craig?
No, that was great. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay. Well, David, you know, we're winding down on time, and I think we got time for probably a few more good questions. Look like we may have a few callers that may have a few questions. But, you know, last thing we were talking about the challenges in different sports. And, you know, I thought you brought up some very good points there. How can our audience reach you? And I remember you told me something about you had a show as well. So
yeah,
if you could share some of that with us.
Yeah, the best way to reach me, two ways. Certainly go to our website, which is www.growingchampionsforlife.com. And just the name of the organization, .com, growingchampionsforlife.com. And then they can also write me an email directly if they have a question. And my email address is david@growingchampionsforlife.com. So as long as they can remember growingchampionsforlife.com and david@growingchampionsforlife.com, they'll be able to reach me, and I'll be happy to respond to questions.
Okay. All right, family. We've been talking with Mr. David Benzel. You know, like I said, he is a national record holder in water skiing. You know, I never did get a chance to ask you what got you into water skiing. If you could share a little bit of that with us and close us out, that would be great.
Yeah, I lived in Minnesota when I first got involved in skiing, which probably sounds crazy because it's so cold up there. But, you know, there are a lot of lakes there. It's the land of 10,000 lakes, and there's a lot of water skiing. So I started out skiing in Minnesota, and then I moved to Florida so I could ski full time. And that's where I live now, is just outside of Orlando.
Okay. All right. Do you have anything to close us with?
Well, just that it's just a great opportunity for parents and kids to have a very meaningful relationship through sports. But we have to remember to play our role correctly, and that is to let our kids have as much responsibility and control over their sport and over their experience. And our job is to support them and love them and provide the logistical support and the emotional support try not to be a judge or a critic about it. And if we do that, they'll always come to us with their questions, and they'll always come to us for advice. And that's one of the greatest blessings of a child-parent relationship through our whole life.
Well, you know, family, we've been talking with Mr. David Benzel, a wonderful guest on the show today, the Parents Coach Brand Network, and we look forward to hopefully having him on again. And, you know, in the near future, and sharing some more information with us. Again, if you try to reach out Mr. David Benzel, you can reach him at Growing Champions for Life, Growing Champions for Life, or David Benzel at growingchampionsforlife.com. Or did I get that right, David?
No, my email address is david@growingchampionsforlife, and the website is growingchampionsforlife.com.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for the correction. But
that's all right.
Hopefully you've learned something this afternoon. And, again, sharing this information with us, hey, we appreciate it, David. And, again, hopefully we can have you on again to share some information with us. And I think the next time we get on, we're going to break down the five strategies and share that with us as well.
Sure.
Remember you told us that you have a show that you also do on the internet. Can you share that with us real quick, and then we're going
to
close
Yeah, it's if they go to my homepage of my website, on the very bottom, they find a link to heartbeatradiousa.com. It's called heartbeatradiousa.com, and I'm on every Monday at 1:30 for a half-hour show.
All right, sir. Again, we thank you for coming on and sharing this time with us, and look forward to talking to you again. I'll be sending you some more information that we talked about yesterday.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
Hey, it's been a pleasure and truly a blessing for us for you to come on and share your knowledge and your wisdom with us. So on that note, we thank you, and hope to hear from you soon.
Okay.
I think we're going to close out with my man, Mr. Keith Wright. Keith, where you at?
Student of the game, had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching, I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making small moves. That's how I do.